Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Fine Food Friday, September 18th. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the program, we salute all the meat grillers and chicken fryers out there. You know who you are. Out there with your aprons and your home cholesterol checking kits. On the line today is Chef Jasper Alexander to answer all of your grilling and frying questions. Well, you know his fried chicken. But the man knows his way around a grill as well. Always great to have Chef Alexander on the program. You got a question? Give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Chef Jasper Alexander and your grilling and cooking calls coming up on Vox Pop after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On this episode of Food Friday, it's grilling, frying, and anything else you need to know in the kitchen from Chef Jasper Alexander. He is on the line, ready to answer all your questions. Jasper Alexander received formal training at the Culinary Institute of America. He worked under New York City's premier chefs, then was a chef of several of Seattle's finest houses before he came back to Saratoga to purchase Hattie's Restaurant, where Jasper has been the chef and co-owner with his wife Beth since 2001. Then they opened Hattie's Chicken Shack in Wilton in 2010. Jasper and Beth, along with their team, also operate Hattie's Track Shack at the Saratoga Racecourse and Hattie's Catering. Jasper has been featured in Best Chefs of America, Food and Wine, Esquire Cooking with Paula Deen Magazine, National Geographic Traveler, many others. Hattie's has been named Best Fried Chicken in the U.S. by Food and Wine and Best Fried Chicken in New York State by the Food Network. He even beat Bobby Flay in a chicken frying contest on the Food Network show Throwdown with Bobby Flay in 2006. If you have a question about cooking, grilling, frying, good old-fashioned Southern comfort food, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Jasper Alexander, welcome back. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Ray. How are you? Good to hear your voice. Wish I could see your face.
Well,
but, here we are.
I think you can imagine just how good it looks. Hey, how's the family, man?
As ever.
How's the family?
Everybody's doing good.
Yeah?
Everybody's doing good. We've weathered the storm, as well as can be expected. Everybody's happy and healthy, and, we're plodding through this like everybody else.
Now, when did Hattie's reopen? I assume you've reopened up there.
Yeah, we reopened. The Chicken Shack was able to transition pretty quickly, and that stayed open pretty much throughout
for takeout,
the whole ordeal here for takeout. And the downtown restaurant shut down, as we shut down the Saturday, I think, before Cuomo turned off the lights on that. And then we reopened in the end of May, beginning of June for takeout. And then we opened up for dining outside as soon as we could.
Well, one of the great things about the Chicken Shack, as I know firsthand, is that you get in there, you get out of there, and you get some great stuff. And I swear to God, I'm not making this up. You were on, one of the times you were on, you brought your Nashville fried chicken.
Yes.
And
yeah.
I have had dreams about it. And then I actually went up and bought like a carload full of the stuff and brought it home to the family. But here's the thing, man. Before we get into the grilling, and I have questions about some of your insights on the grill, just give me some insight as to how that Nashville spice came about for you, and that fried chicken is out of sight.
Well, so the really got popularized in Nashville and in Tennessee from a couple of spots, Hattie B's, ironically, being the most well-known. And it's there's a couple of different ways to do it. Some people do it with just a straight dry mix, and then you put the chicken in, like, say, a paper bag with some of that dry mix and do the old shake and bake style, where you toss it around in there. And then the other way, which is the way that we use, is making a really spicy oil that has, it's a vegetable oil that we then infuse with brown sugar and cayenne pepper and garlic salt and onion powder and pepper and chili powder, and the concentration of spice oil is pretty high. So it has quite a kick to it.
It sure does. Now, okay, now you mentioned the oil-based rubs and the dry rubs, and this gets me to my question about grilling, which I'm going to be doing tomorrow. By the way, we're joined by Fantastic. Chef Jasper Alexander. If you have a question about frying or grilling or chicken or whatever, give us a call, 800-348-2551. If you're on the line, hang in there, and we will get to you shortly. So we're going to go and we're going to grill. One of the lovely things, and there aren't a lot of lovely things that have happened with the lockdown, but we have done a lot more grilling at my house.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And my kids, unfortunately, have now taken a great shine to filet mignon, which is not the...
Perfect.
Yeah, it's been great. We put, you know, my wife and I would generally marinate things, but... For that, we put this Montreal seasoning, which is famous stuff, on there. And it was just basically we thought we would dry rub it on. But she said, you know what? We'll put some oil in it and kind of make a kind of like a liquid marinade with oil.
Sure.
And I got to tell you, it came out great. Now, my question for you is, if you were doing a steak, a New York strip or a filet tomorrow on the charcoal, you're going to dry rub? You're going to put some liquid on there?
So it depends on what the cut of meat is, I think, is really the first question you gotta answer. It really, you know, what cut of steak you're using or what type of meat you're using will sort of point you in the direction of what you need to do. With something like a filet, with doesn't have a whole lot of fat in it, which is nice. One of the reasons why it's you know, one of the most popular cuts, and it is one of the more tender cuts. So, you know, you don't tend to have to do a whole lot to it. You can, you know, I like just sort of a straight steak just with salt and pepper or the Montreal seasoning. You can also, you know, one thing that helps a lot is to season it ahead of time, you know, like, you know, bring it out and let the meat get to room temperature and season it, you know, an hour or two or three, you know, before you're going to cook it. And that allows that salt to really penetrate the meat and kind of do its magic and break things down a little bit and brings out the flavor. But really, you know, it's, I think people have been cooking a lot, you know, during this pandemic. And I think that's great. And I think just experimenting and seeing what you guys like to do. I mean, you want to have a little bit of oil on the steak when you grill it, so that it doesn't stick, or oil your grill. Conversely, you can do that as well. But, you know, you want to have something that acts as a little medium to transfer that heat into the steak. More important with a steak that has less fat, like a tenderloin, than say it would be with like a ribeye that has, you know, a lot of big fat chunks as well as, you know, more significant marbling.
Yeah, you know, and New York strip is another one that we really like and we've had good success with. But for some reason, the children are like, oh, no, the New York strip is not going to do it. And I said, you know, a lot of people like New York strip more than filet.
Absolutely.
But, you know, it is what it is. All right, so that's that. The other question I have, and we'll take a quick break and then hit the phones, 800-348-2551. This business about taking it off the grill, covering it, and somehow it continues to cook. Now, this is something that my wife says definitely happens, and I say, well, how does that happen?
So, you know, what you're talking about is the resting time.
Yeah.
That is super critical with any kind of cooking method with any kind of meat for the most part. And, you know, what that allows it to do is whenever you cook something, you know, you're the heat is coming from the outside that drives whatever moisture that product has in towards the middle. And so by allowing it to rest, you give whatever that muscle is time to sort of relax. And it as it's, you know, as it is not, you know, as you remove it from the heat, you know, then the muscle has a chance to relax, cool down a little bit, and all the juices that are in the meat sort of spread back out throughout the meat, and that's when you get your true temperature. So, you know, that can also dictate a little bit of a rise in temperature, and the bigger the piece of meat is, the greater the rise of temperature may be. So, and usually it's about 5 or 10 degrees, depending on the size of the cut of meat. It's not much bigger than that. So, you know, you might get a little bit more of a increase in temperature if you're doing a prime rib than say a piece of tenderloin.
So, if I take a New York strip off the grill and it's medium rare, and we cover it in foil and let it rest, it's not going to then become medium well if we let it sit 10 minutes, right?
No, it's a temperature thing, and you know, using a thermometer is great, especially one that a little bit better quality one that's an InstaRead thermometer, which is a little bit more accurate, and you don't have to get as much of the thermometer into the meat as with like a traditional dial thermometer or sort of an analog thermometer. And that helps. And then it's just allowing it time to rest,
yeah.
You know, and as it rests, you know, the temperature might go up a little bit, you know, a couple of degrees for a smaller steak, but then it's going to come right down. And really what happens is by the relaxing of the meat, you get a good look at what the real temperature is, you know, any of those pictures that you see of the various, you know, rare, medium, you know, so on. That's a picture of a fully rested piece of meat. So, you know, you could, if you took a steak off that would say was medium and cut it right in half, it might look medium well right then and there. But if you were allowed to rest for 5 minutes, then all those juices are going to redistribute throughout the whole cut of meat, and then it's going to look medium.
Well, that I did not know. That's cool. Let's take a quick break. Jasper Alexander is our guest. It's Food Friday. We'll get your calls in a moment. 800-348-2551 is the number. Earl for you here as bumper music on Vox Pop Food Friday. Jasper Alexander joins us today for cooking and grilling and frying, and you know him from Hattie's Restaurant. So let's go right to the phones. Usually the first couple callers on this program are the most patient people in the world. They've been waiting a really long time. So let's hope Alan in Palatine Bridge doesn't yell at me. Alan, you're on.
Hi, can you hear me, sir?
You betcha. Go ahead.
Yep, absolutely.
I've got a little bit kind of interesting question. I love the idea of chicken and steak, but I got a little bit different. What about cooking hot peppers on a grill? You know, I've got some great hot peppers. I'm actually in my garden right now picking them. And I was wondering, Can you give me some advice on hot peppers on a grill or even inside in a pan? What do you use and how do you do hot peppers?
So with hot peppers, I actually have worked in many restaurants that have just served hot peppers on a, you know, as like a bar appetizer or, you know, in a sort of a tavern setting, and they're great. And with stuff like that, you know, really good homegrown pepper, you know, simple is best. So a little good extra virgin olive oil and a little salt and pepper and grill them up. And if you like them plain, you can just go for them right from there. They'd be nice with a little bit of grits or, you know, a mashed potato as a side, something like that, something that'll, you know, calm the heat down a little bit if they're really hot. But with a good, you know, grilled vegetable, especially one that's homegrown and is going to very likely be, you know, as good as you're going to get, you know, kind of don't mess it up. You know, simple is the best.
You know, like olive oil on a grill then, maybe for 5 or 10 minutes,
yeah.
To keep turning.
Yeah, olive oil on a grill. Yeah, let it blister a little bit to your liking. You get the skin, but you don't want to cook it so hot that that you char the skin so much that it tastes burnt. So, you know, maybe start out with a higher heat and then turn it down to like a more of a medium heat. So the pepper actually cooks a little bit before the skin is so charred that it's unpalatable.
Okay. Hey, thank you,
you know,
very
unless
much.
Unless you're going to peel it, you know, and in which case, unless you're going to sort of peel it, which you certainly can do, you know, in that case, you know, really char the outside and then just, you know, scrape the peel off with the back of a knife or with a spoon and get that skin right off of there and just have, you know, what essentially would be a roasted hot pepper.
Alan, thanks a lot for the call and we appreciate your patience. The number here is 800-348-2551. Chef Jasper Alexander joins us today. And before we get to the next call, I know I've been harping on the Nashville seasoning. All right. I'm obsessed. All right. So I assume that in addition to your fried chicken, it would probably play pretty well on a pork chop. But my question for you is, would it play on a steak?
I don't. Part of what makes it so good on the fried chicken is the fact that oil or the rub, either way, gets into all the little nooks and crannies of the fried chicken skin, which,
yeah,
of course, is the best part of the fried chicken,
right?
You know, hands down.
Agreed.
So that is kind of where that textural heat, you know, combination really comes into play. So I don't think it would translate as well. I mean, if you're a person that really likes hot and doesn't care,
yeah,
what the application method is to get that heat fit,
yeah,
you know, then I think it'd be fine. Then all bets are off, you know, slather as much cayenne and stuff as you want to on there. But part of what makes it so good is the crunchiness of the fried chicken and the fact that spice mixture gets into all those little folds in the skin. And that's what makes it really good.
All right, man. So you're going to do that for chicken fried steak one of these days, right?
Yeah, it would be good in chicken fried steak.
All right,
it definitely would.
Give me a call. I'll be right up with the back
of the
menu.
We do chicken fried steak at brunch. I haven't, you know, you've given me an idea. So, you know, we do brunch on Saturdays and Sundays from 9 to 2, and so on Saturday I'm gonna dip a piece of chicken fried steak, which we have on the menu all the time, into that dip and see how it is. Oh. That could be really good.
All right, well, I'll be a tester if you want. Let's go to Joan in Schenectady. Hello? Joan, you're on.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
Sorry to give
you
two calls right in a row with vegetarian questions.
Oh, that's great.
But I did grow. Oh, good. I just grew okra for the first time this year, and I just harvested my first one.
Uh-huh.
I've only had it served to me in, you know, the typical kind of fried, sautéed with a whole bunch of other things. Can you give me something exciting to do with it? And like, are different herbs or spices that might particularly pull out the flavor nicely?
So, one of my favorite ways to do okra is fried. You know, dust it in some cornmeal. You know, you can put in a little bit of buttermilk and roll it around in a cornmeal that you can season with, you know, maybe some chili powder and a little bit of cayenne and some garlic salt and some onion powder. And, you know, give some flavor to it. Or you could buy one of those pre-done Cajun seasonings or something along those lines in the store too. That would work. So I really like that. It also stews particularly well. So I wouldn't necessarily classify it as exciting, but a dish that we used to serve a while back was stewed okra with bacon. So you get a nice thick cut bacon and render that off in the pan and get it brown, and then add some onion to it. And then add your okra, and then add some crushed tomatoes and maybe a little chili flake and salt and pepper. And that's a really nice way to have it as well. And it's great in any sort of soups or stews or, you know, any of those sort of applications. It's really lovely for it. But it does fry up particularly well, too, especially the fresh stuff. Especially when it's fresh right out of your garden.
It can take some heat.
You know, if you like it, you know, it can, some people complain that it has a little bit of a slimy, you know, can have a little bit of a sliminess to it. That varies. But when you stew it, that definitely cooks out. And when you fry it, it pretty much cooks out as well, too, or is covered up by the fact that you've got a nice crispy piece of okra.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Joan, thanks a lot. Have a great weekend. The number is 800-348-2551. Chef Jasper Alexander is here with us today. Have you been on TV since the lockdown began?
There has been no TV gigs available since the lockdown occurred. Unfortunately, no. Mm. I have not had the access to that.
Oh, well, I'm sure it'll come eventually. I mean, things got to get back to normal at some point. Let's go to Let's go to Ray in Red Hook. Ray, you're up.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
I love Hattie's. Hattie's is great.
Yep.
I never asked the question before, but what about brining?
Brining
my chicken.
Absolutely. I think, you know, brining helps any, you know, can really help almost any meat. And even, you know, we spoke of earlier seasoning the meat ahead of time when you're going to grill it, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours, 6 hours, even up to, you know, 24 hours before you're going to cook it. If the cut of meat is big enough. And that's even sort of a type of brining. It's a great thing to do, especially for gives you a little bit of insurance from overcooking it, which is nice, you know, especially a wet brine. And it does, you know, really bring out all the flavor of the meat. You can infuse some flavors with it. I mean, you know, turkey is the obvious, thing that, you know, a lot of people brine, but you can brine whole chickens. I mean, at the Chicken Shack, our chicken breast sandwich, our grilled chicken breast sandwich, we brine first for 24 hours before we cook it. We brine it in garlic and salt and sugar and thyme and rosemary and sage.
What liquid do you use?
Just water for that. But you can, like, the But we use water for that particular application at Hattie's, but you can use any sort of, but you can use wine if you wanted to impart that flavor for my turkey for Thanksgiving that we do. I use apple cider. So that's a great, you know, liquid for a brine. Coca-Cola, you know, is used, or some sort of soda. Dr. Pepper, you know, is adds an interesting flavor. So really the liquid is up to you. Chicken stock works as well too, but it doesn't have to, you know, water's perfectly acceptable for most things. It really depends on if you want to add an extra little bit of something.
So I make my own vinegar. I have like 6 or 7 different kinds of vinegar. Would vinegar mm-hmm. work?
You can put a little bit of vinegar as a acid. Yeah, I mean, acid's definitely going to brighten it up. And if you think of like, say, lemon juice, adding lemon juice to a brine would be perfectly acceptable in all kinds of instances. So vinegars are totally fair game. You know, you just want to make sure that I would probably, you know, just make sure that the vinegar is of a flavor that is going to, you know, sort of complement what your idea of a finished dish is, you know, but absolutely.
Okay.
And you'd want to use it sparingly. I mean, you don't want to put a ton in, and you could look at any sort of basic brine ratios. It has some sort of lemon juice or vinegar component, use that as a guide. And it would all be based on a gallon, you know, or a quart, depending on the size of the recipe.
Thanks, Ray, for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Chef Jasper Alexander is our guest. Boy, you've opened up a whole line of questioning here about brine. The first one is, so how much apple cider do you use when you brine your Thanksgiving turkey? That's an amazing idea.
So if that's my part. My wife cooks Thanksgiving soup to nuts. I brine the turkey just because, you know, I get it in at the restaurant and it's easier because I got lots of buckets and things like that. And then I'm consult on turkey baking or turkey roasting and gravy. I'm consult only. So she runs with it, but it's a gallon. If I remember correctly, it's a gallon of apple cider vinegar, and then it takes about another 3 gallons of water to cover the turkey totally in the bucket that I use.
Ah, very
so about a one to three ratio.
I think you mentioned Dr. Pepper. All right, now as a lark at my house, we tried a Dr. Pepper based on a ham, and it was out of sight. Okay, but
yeah,
brining a turkey in Dr. Pepper, that sounds like sacrilege.
No, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah,
I'd maybe do some pork chops or something like that. You know, it would be fun, or a ham would be great. But no, I would not brine a turkey in Dr. Pepper.
All right, we'll get back.
I think that'd be a bad idea.
Yeah, but if you do that, please roll tape on it, because I'd love to see it.
I will.
The number here is 800-348-2551, and we'll get back to the phones in a minute. Last question about brining, and I know Rick Orlando and I talked about this years ago on the show, and frankly, I'm getting so senile, I forgot what the answer was. Is there a point of diminishing returns? Like, in other words, if you brine something like a turkey or a chicken or whatever, whole chicken, is there a certain amount of time where you're like, oh yeah, you'll get nothing more out of this?
Yes. And at that point, you sort of, as you said, you sort of gone too far.
Like, what is that point?
So, well, it varies. You know, there's a couple of factors at play. There is how big the piece of meat is, and then how intense, mainly the salination of the liquid is, how much salt do you put in it. And so you want to keep those things in balance, and you need to factor the size of the meat, the length of time that you're going to brine it, and how salty you make the liquid. And so there's some basic brine ratios, and those are, it's usually a cup of salt and a half a cup of sugar per gallon of liquid. Don't quote me on that, because I'm doing it off the top of my head, but that's pretty close.
Yep.
And so if you were to use that sort of general ratio as a solution, and then you put a little piece of meat in there, you put like some little thin, you know, half inch pork chops in there, and you let them sit in there for 3 days, they're going to be over brined, and they're almost going to be almost like a piece of corned beef. That's kind of what happens.
Yeah.
It gets really tough, and the same reaction that sort of helps to break down those proteins then sort of resets them, and it gets really, it doesn't get necessarily tough, but the whole texture of the meat changes to something that's not particularly appealing. So yeah, you've got to keep those things in balance, but it's not hard to do. And, you know, typically a brine, the minimum time on a brine would be a couple hours, and then at most it'd be 2 or 3 days. You know, I brine my turkey for 3 days, I think 2 3 days.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Chef Jasper Alexander's our guest. Go ahead, you finish that up, and then we'll get back to the phones.
So the chicken that we do at the restaurant, you know, which is a 5-6 ounce piece of chicken breast, you know, that brines for about, you know, 12 to 24 hours. Any more than that, you know, and it would start to suffer.
Interesting. All right, let's go to Michelle in, where are you calling from, Michelle? Colchester?
Chichester.
Okay, you're on. Go ahead.
So my neighbor caught a bass in the reservoir.
Where did they catch it?
I think the reservoir. We lost you there, Michelle. Try it again. Oh, boy. All right. Well, if Michelle calls back, we'll get her right at the top of the list. I apologize. Your signal left as soon as you got on the air. Albert in Danbury. Albert, you're on.
Hi. Can you hear me all right?
You bet.
Yep. Hello.
Hello.
Good. Yes.
Can you hear me?
Sure.
Yes.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd like to ask you about smoking. I used to do a smoking in a little Chief, and I like dry rubs. What do you recommend for this new big electric mini fridge smoker I just inherited? I do a lot of venison.
Well, I mean, so not knowing exactly what kind of smoker the art and the act of smoking is all the same. It's all the same principles, right? So it's lower heat for a longer period of time. So, you know, whether or not you get that with an electric smoker, a Brinkham charcoal smoker or some big elaborate pellet smoker, the basic principles are all the same. So, which is slow and low. And that's key. Rubs are a great idea for anything that you smoke, and letting the rub sit on there for, you know, a good, you know, 24, 48 hours before you smoke it is a good idea. And that's the way I would approach it. But, you know, your temperatures, you want to be in the, you know, depending on how long and how big the piece of meat is, you know, in the, you know, low 200s, 250, you know, in that range.
Okay. All right. Very good. Appreciate it.
Hey, good luck with that.
Absolutely.
Chef Jasper Alexander is our guest from Hattie's Restaurant at Hattie's Chicken Shack. We'll be back with more of your calls coming up at 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Food Friday, Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is the number. We're always happy to have Chef Jasper Alexander here. Do you do any grilling at home?
We do a lot of grilling at home. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's especially in the summertime, but I grill year round. You know, I'll dust the snow off the grill in the middle of winter.
Yeah, me too.
If that's what's required, for sure.
You know, it's funny. The people in the food industry, I would imagine, and I guess I have this wrong, but I would think that you get done making all this food for all these people, and you get home and you say, you know, kids, pack it up. We're going to Arby's. But no, you actually do your own cooking.
We cook a lot at home. Yeah, I would say, especially like everybody else for the last few months, you know, virtually 100% at home. But you know, it does go in waves a little bit in the summertime. You know, we can get a little bit lackadaisical, mainly just because our schedules get so crazy. But this summer, you know, was
a little different.
Peaceful. Yeah, it was peaceful in many ways.
Well, here's hoping that next summer is not so peaceful, huh?
Yeah, for sure. Well, it was nice. I mean, it was definitely a break. It was the least stressful summer I've had in many ways in 20 years. So, in some ways, we enjoyed it very much, and others, it was, a little less than ideal, but on we march.
Yeah, no, I assume that with no track, the Track Shack was not happening.
The Track Shack did not happen. It was dark. There was a little discussion early on about the possibility of letting, you know, patrons in there as was reported,
yeah,
you know, all over, but it didn't go anywhere. So there was nothing happening there.
All right, Jasper Alexander, let's get back to the phones. 800-348-2551 on this Food Friday. Beverly in Amherst. Beverly, you're on.
Hi, guys. I wanted to share a tip regarding okra. It was shared with me. Right. And especially if you're going to, if you're not going to put it in a stew or something, you always select the smallest pieces from up to 2.5 inches, and you slice it on the diagonal. That keeps it from being slimy. Don't know how what the magic is, but that's the trick. I've used it over and over again. Yep.
Works like a charm?
You just don't get those large, tough pieces. Beg your pardon?
Yeah. I said it works like a charm, huh?
Yeah, it does. It really does. I never pick anything larger than 2.5 inches, and I always cut off the end and then slice it on the diagonal, and the slices need to be thin.
Wow.
Not thick.
Beverly, where'd you grow up?
Okay. I grew up in Tennessee.
Okay, so this, I assume, this knowledge was passed down to you, right?
It was passed to me from somebody else, but not a family member.
Very interesting. Now, Jasper, you have roots. You have roots in the South as well, too, right?
I do. Yeah, my whole family is from the South. Winston-Salem, mostly in Lexington, North Carolina, but now they're spread out from Texas, Arkansas, Tennessee, Georgia, North Carolina.
And you never heard that information, though, huh?
No, never.
Well, Beverly, thanks so much.
Well,
always
you're very
good to learn something.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend. Chef Jasper Alexander is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Letty in Stockbridge, you're on.
Yes, I have this humongous butternut squash, which I don't even think I can, you know, cut into with a knife. But once I do, is it possible to grill it? Like,
absolutely.
Down, not, and how do you suggest doing that?
So...
And what's the best way to cut it without killing yourself?
Butternut squash, or even after all the years I've been cooking, I always look at a butternut squash twice before I start to cut it, because they sometimes don't want to give up that outer hard shell.
Well, like a table saw, right?
So yeah, exactly. So if you have a choice and if you plan on grilling it, hopefully the squash is really thick up top. The part that isn't, you know, hopefully the bulbous part on the bottom is smaller. And it's got a longer top, because that's a solid piece of butternut squash, and that will grill easier than that funky rounded part at the bottom. So what I do is I cut the top and the bottom off, you know, by say a quarter inch, you know, and then I try to determine where that rounder end ends, and I cut that off, and then I deal with that separately. And then once you have a flat surface, once you've cut that off, then you can put it on a flat surface, and hopefully it's not too tall. If it's too tall, then cut it in half again, so you're not trying to cut something that's 10 or 12 inches high off your cutting board. And then just go very, very carefully down the outside of the butternut squash and cut little strips of, you know, depending on the size of your knife, it'll be anywhere from half an inch to like an inch off at a time, and just make your way around. Just keep turning the butternut squash a little bit and cutting the end off. And then you do the same thing on the rounded end. It's just a little bit more difficult. So that's how it's.
You can't just cut the whole thing in half, stick the big thick halves in the grill and let them cook.
Oh, absolutely you could. It depends on what you want. It depends on what you want as a butternut product. So you absolutely could cut the thing in half, scoop the seeds out, and grill it, you know, flesh side down on the grill, and get your marks on it, and then either move it to a lower heat portion of your grill or flip it upside down. You could even put it on a cookie sheet with some olive oil and some salt and pepper, and just roast it in the grill altogether, which would be just like you would roast it in your oven, but outside, and you're not, you know, kicking heat into the kitchen. What I was describing at first would be if you wanted to have like slices of butternut squash,
right.
Grilled butternut squash. But you could
absolutely. And then in terms of preparation?
Preparation again with vegetables. I like to keep it really simple. So a little, yeah, I mean, you could do, you know, definitely a little olive oil. Cause like I said, you've got to have that, you got to have that medium to transfer the heat into the vegetable. So, and then always salt and pepper, and then maple syrup would be great. A little brown sugar would be great. You know, just realize that sugar is going to burn on the grill. So that might be something you want to do sort of towards the end. And you could even, you know, mix the brown sugar with a little bit of the oil and then brush it on, you know, would be fine too. But
great.
Yeah, it, Absolutely. It'll grill up really nicely. It'll caramelize, you know, and it'll burn some of that sugar in the butternut squash and really give it a nice flavor.
Letty, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Chef Jasper Alexander is here to answer your questions about grilling and frying chicken and whatnot. And let's go over to Ryan. Oh, Ryan, that was very loud. Turn whatever it is you're listening to down, and welcome to the show.
My apologies. I'm working outside right now.
Okay.
My quick question, and then I'll hang up so you can just answer over the line.
Sure.
So I typically use a 3-2-1 method when I smoke ribs, and they come out tender, too tender. The meat is too fall off the bone. How could I alter the timing of in and out of the aluminum foil wrap to get a more, I guess, resilient rib that you can actually cut and enjoy?
All right. And
let me ask one quick question. What temperature are you doing it at?
Usually like 225.
Okay. So,
it'd be 3 hours without the cheat, 2 hours in a cheat, and then 1 hour with a little higher of a heat. And then obviously they would be done. So I'm just looking for them the meat to just stay on the bone a little more. Is there a different method?
I would. I mean, you're doing everything right. The only thing I would maybe do is not turn it up at the end, or even turn it down a little bit more at the end, you know? And so you're not giving that final blast of really intense heat, and then keeping it a little slower the whole way through, and even adding, you know, I don't think you need to add any time necessarily, depending on the size of these ribs, but maybe not cranking up the heat quite as much at the end. But it sounds like you're doing everything right.
Okay, I think we lost him there. But question for Ryan, and I guess he answered it, was what is the 3-2-1 method? I've never heard that.
Well, that's the method where you cook, you do it at a few different temperatures, and then you keep them at, so you start at a higher temperature, I mean at a lower temperature, and unwrapped, and then you wrap it for a little bit, which helps keep some of the moisture in, and then he was raising the temperature. You know, anytime you're smoking, I think slower and lower is better. So I would either keep it the same or drop it back down.
Okie doke. Let's go back to the phones. Add Michelle. You were the one we dropped earlier in Colchester. Michelle, go ahead.
Oh, great.
Oh, Chichester. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My neighbor caught a bass in the reservoir, and so it's got the head and the tail. The innards are out, and it's scaled, and I wanted to grill it, and I want to know what's the best way to grill a whole fish like that, and what's the best marinade to put or spices.
So how big is the bass? Is it big enough to open up and actually sort of stuff with some stuff, or is it how many pounds is the bass?
I think probably 2 pounds, okay. Maybe 2.5, and split. There's a split already, so when it was cleaned out.
So I would, you know, something like that is really nice to take and make sure there's enough room to stuff, so you can cut open the cavity a little bit more and stuff it full of lemon and maybe some fennel and some thyme and some rosemary, some aromatics, anything that you like, you know, even a little bit of leek, and then salt and pepper the fish, and you can wrap that up in foil, salt and pepper and a little oil, wrap it up in foil and do it right on top of the stove like that. Or you can just take some string and tie that fish shut a little bit so those aromatics stay in the fish, and then again salt and pepper and oil, and you know, some of the skin might come off, some of the skin might blister. I really like a sort of a blistered crispy fish skin, especially a bass skin, so I find that to be a plus. And then just cook it until it's done, depending on the size of the heat, you know, depending on the temperature. You know, it may take, you know, 6-7 minutes aside, you know, to get it to cook it all the way through, you know, approximately. Could fillet it, you know, you could fillet it and then do it individually. You could also, you know, a lot of times I'll do a whole side of fish on the grill on a cookie sheet on a piece of foil and just sort of use it like the oven and put those aromatics over the top. But I really like a crispy bass skin is really nice.
Michelle, thanks so much for calling and for persevering and getting back in here after we lost you the first time. Jasper Alexander is here. Herb is in Galway, I should say. Herb, go ahead.
Hi. I got a two-part question. One was, I'm confused about which kind of olive oil to use for frying or just for sautéing. And my second part is, I like to fry, but I don't know what to do with the excess oil since I'm only cooking for my wife and I.
Ah.
Right. So for the first question, you know, for cooking purposes, a regular pumice olive oil, which is sort of a second pressing of the olive oil, is totally sufficient. I mean, you can definitely cook with extra virgin olive oil. It's a little bit more expensive, obviously, so there's that factor. It also has a slightly lower smoking point. That's less of a factor in the grand scheme of things. So it's really a price issue. It'll definitely have a more pronounced flavor. Something that's really delicate, like if it was a piece of Dover sole or something and you didn't want to overpower it with olive oil, you might choose a pumice oil that is a little less intense in flavor. But really, you know, anytime those oils are interchangeable for the most part. It's really a cost factor and a flavor factor. And as far as what to do with your leftover oil, that is one of the issues with frying at home, is what to do with leftover oil. So your best thing to do is to, you know, if you have the room, is to strain it and keep it in the refrigerator if you can, if you have the room, if you have an extra refrigerator, or certainly outside in the wintertime would be fine, or in the garage covered. You don't want to, hey, the stuff, you can't hold on to it indefinitely. So you can use it multiple times. But if it starts to get funky and smell rancid, you definitely don't want to use it. As far as getting rid of it, the best thing to do is probably, you know, if you know somebody that owns a restaurant or you frequent a restaurant, you know, ask them if you can, you know, take it to them. And I shudder to say this because I can't imagine how many requests I'm going to get for this.
Smart,
but most
Jasper.
Restaurants have, yeah. So let me give a disclaimer, but most restaurants have, you know, an old oil rendering situation that they have to deal with. Usually it's a 50-gallon drum or something more elaborate, but somebody dropping off a gallon of oil isn't going to upset the balance of that disposal system. So I would not do it down the drain, you know. So that can just clog up your pipes. So that's not a good idea, but it is something you have to factor into. You could also take it to perhaps a gas station would take it. I'm not positive.
Well, your buddies in the restaurant industry will be loving you for that one.
Well, I'm going to get lots of texts now.
Hey, man, why don't you just convert an old VW bus and, you know, drive around the country with the thing, right?
There you go.
I've heard people do that. Let's go to Helen in New Lebanon. Helen, you're on.
Hi. Yes, I heard the discussion about butternut squash, and I've learned a little trick.
Oh, yeah.
If you put that whole butternut squash in a warm oven, I've usually just put it in the oven, turn it on to like 200, leave it there for 10 minutes or so until it's warm to the touch, take it out, and the knife goes right through it pretty easily. You don't have to risk your, you know, fingers.
Your fingers,
and, yeah.
Just, that's so a great trick, and I can totally see that. I can see that working as well.
The skin, and it's great. You just can peel it very easily that way. Cut it in half and then, you know, chunk it or whatever and peel it.
Perfect.
That's a great tip. So,
Helen, thanks a lot. Let's quickly go in the waning couple of minutes here to Dennis in Bethlehem. Dennis, you're on with Chef Jasper Alexander.
Thanks. I had a question about what lamb on the grill, what cuts and how to prep it.
Lamb?
Lamb.
Lamb.
Yes.
So, so lamb chops and lamb racks are obviously, you know, that's one of my favorite meats, period. So I love a nice lamb rack. You could definitely do leg of lamb on the grill. Blade steaks on the grill. Blade steaks are sort of thin cuts off the shoulder. Those are really nice on the grill as well. And as far as flavorings for lamb, I love, you know, garlic, rosemary, I think goes great with lamb. A sneaky thing that I put on lamb a lot, which sounds weird, but it really, especially with a leg of lamb, if you open up the leg of lamb, rub it full of garlic, rosemary, maybe some thyme, a little bit of ground up or mashed up anchovies. I know it sounds a little weird, but anchovies and lamb go really, really well together.
Well, at least you didn't say Dr. Pepper, so good for you.
Yeah, I would stay away from Dr. Pepper. But anchovy, just a little bit, not too much, but it really sort of brings out the gaminess of the lamb in a nice way and adds a nice little saltiness to it as well. Those are lamb chops and leg of lamb are probably two of my favorite cuts of lamb for sure.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
And lamb loin is great as well. You know, super tender, not particularly big. So you need a lot. Those are lamb loin chops are really great as well.
Well, Dennis, thanks for the call. And I guess we will have to wrap it up there. Chef Jasper Alexander, how do people find Hattie's on the web and find, your hours? And I assume that you may have scaled back a little bit, but you're ramping up again.
We've scaled back. So downtown at the 45 Filer Street location, we're open Wednesday through Saturday night for dinner and then Saturday and Sunday for brunch. And then the Chicken Shack in Wilton is open 7 days a week from noon to nine. And they can find us at hattiesrestaurant.com or hattieschickenshacksplural.com. We'd be happy to see everybody and hope everybody's doing well. It was great to be here again.
Oh, man, it was so great to
have you here. I wish I could have brought you treats. I felt bad, no treats.
Well, you weren't. Let me tell you, I wasn't the only one complaining about that today. There were plenty of people in this building. Hey, man, we'll see you next time. Hopefully you'll be here in Studio A again soon. And take care. Hope the family stays well.
Absolutely. You too, Ray. Thank you so much.
Support for WAMC comes from Berkshire Food Co-op in downtown Great Barrington, a grocery store with a mission to provide clean whole foods to all friends and neighbors. Everybody's welcome. Berkshire.coop. Big Y, family-owned and operated market with locations throughout the Berkshires, celebrating more than 80 years of serving communities throughout New England. BigY.com. And Troy Waterfront Farmers Market at Troy's Riverfront Park, now offering fresh prepared foods to go. Saturdays, 8:30 to 2, taking orders online for Sunday pickups. TroyMarket.org. Once again, thanks to Chef Jasper Alexander for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Tremendous calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Now, we had two screeners again today. This is very strange. Charlene Knight started. Jordan Yoxall took over. And then Charlene Knight came back. So I've got a little scorecard. We'll post it online later. Have a splendid weekend. We'll be back on Monday for a Medical Monday at 2. Right now, it's the best of our knowledge.